T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show. Clint Sterner's Football at 4.
The NFL has announced its offseason plans in a memo to all teams. And here it is, according to Ian Rappaport. With 4 weeks of virtual workouts, virtual work, 1 week of on-field teaching work beginning May 17th, and then 4 weeks of OTAs and minicamps, and only minicamps will be mandatory. And in response to that, the NFLPA, which is the NFL Players Association, they are strongly urging players to boycott voluntary off-season workouts. Which we've all heard this, whether we're talking about college or pro ball, there's off-season, parts of the off-season that are quote-unquote voluntary work, but ultimately the coaches got an eye out there. They want you at workouts. They want you at lifting sessions. They want you at field sessions.
You couldn't miss these.
No, hell no, I couldn't miss those. And I think big picture, show, I'm disappointed in what the NFLPA is doing here. I understand there's a business side to the NFL, and I understand that the NFLPA has to represent the players and keep things fair and make sure owners and teams aren't taking advantage of them, for a lack of better terms, whether that's financially or by practicing extra, requiring extra work. But, man, the NFLPA urging players to boycott voluntary off-season workouts, to me, is silly as hell. It's one of those where it directly impacts the product that you put on the field. It directly impacts a player's ability to perform at his highest level. There is zero doubt about it that being on location with your team as much as possible in the off season, in the weight room, in field drills, in practices, that is a major part of team sports, of guys coming together, of leadership putting their stamp on a team, and to for the NFLPA to urge players to boycott it and essentially not take part in it unless it's obviously mandatory. It's crazy, and the first reason is that good teams in the NFL, they're going to get work, Joe. They're going to get their work somehow, some way, just like Tom Brady did last year. You couldn't go to the facility. Tom Brady took his squad to a high school field. The good teams in this league, the elite players in this league that are in leadership positions, established leadership positions, with organizations that have winning as their number one priority, they're going to get together, so the health risk is going to be there. They're going to get together, and they're going to get this work in. So the NFLPA doing this, urging players to boycott, I can't make sense of it all for that reason in particular.
Well, I can understand, as you said, the NFL Players Association, you know, fighting and
trying
to hold it. Yeah, because, you know, they did just give up the 17th game. They did get that, and I can understand that, but I just couldn't see this being a move that players would want. I mean, is you as a former player discussing about how you don't want it? And this, sometimes there are situations, Clint, where certain level of player, certain status of player doesn't matter, right? From, all right, the Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes level is different than the A.J. McCarron level.
Right.
But in this case, I think the top guys who want to win want to be there so
be
they
there.
Can have some cohesion going. As we saw, Tom was at a damn high school in Tampa somewhere. Tom was breaking in accidentally to people's homes thinking it was Byron Leftwich's house because he wanted to get. And then guys in the A.J. McCarron, they're fighting for jobs. They need to be. So I would be surprised that the players would go along with it because all levels of players – I would think they would be – I could see them understanding, yeah, let's fight this, but maybe we got to look at a different way because us missing time like this is detrimental to us.
So they're put in – to me, they're put in a bad spot. They're put in – I mean, the guys like the ones you mentioned, the veterans in this league, right? I mean, they're put in a bad spot to where – because the NFLPA didn't act as one. Like the NFLPA, the body of players didn't act as one and say, nope, we're boycotting anything that's not mandatory, right? They put it on the players and each team, and now each team's coming out with their statement saying, yeah, we're not gonna be at mandatory workouts and yada, yada, yada. So there's some of that being, that dynamic exists here too of like if the NFLPA urges you to do something, it's a good idea if you get on board, because if you don't a group of players in Houston or a group of players in Dallas, if you don't get on board, then it doesn't show the solidarity in the cohesiveness in the NFLPA and as an entire body of player. So it's one of those where if the NFLPA is urging people to do it, like publicly urging players to do it, odds are they're going to come out and they're going to publicly say that they're going to stand with the NFLPA. My point is why do it? Well, you want if you want to win, you need to be at the facility as a group where really the health risk is minimized, because hell, the NFL just announced yesterday that the teams are, if you're going to work directly with the players, you're going to have to be vaccinated.
Yeah, Buffalo Bills said you got to have your vaccination card with you.
These guys are going to work out anyway. Why in the hell would you not want to do it at your own facility? Why would you not encourage them to do it at a place where you got trainers if you get hurt, right? Why wouldn't you do it where you got strength staffs that know what the hell they're doing and can put you on a lot of these guys can go their own strength coach. I get that. But why wouldn't you want to do it as a group? There's more bonds built on the practice field with no coaches around and no pads on, and in the weight room with no footballs around and no position coaches around. The bonds are built there just as much as they are on the field during training camp. So I just, to me, it's a no-brainer why in the hell they wouldn't want this done. The other thing is young players need this work. They need as much of this work as they can possibly get. You don't think Drew Lock in Denver needs this work? You don't think Tua in Miami needs this work? And these are all guys. It's fine and dandy if you're a guy that has the ability to walk in and just take over a locker room and force guys and by putting the hammer down, go, hey, guys, we're throwing at this high school down the street. Have your ass there or you have a hard time being in my huddle. But the reality is all these guys aren't like that. You got Joe Burrow. You got Josh Allen. Josh Allen took his team to the AFC Championship last year. I've watched his game. I've watched a ton of his film. He needs to be throwing right now with his guys and really needs to be coordinating the throwing sessions and watching film with his coach and going through the mental aspect of
just,
it.
But not just those guys. You think Matt Stafford needs?
No question. Yeah, you're right. Sam Darnold.
Carson Wentz.
Yes. All these guys, I mean, you can go down the list. Jared Goff, you can go down the list of all these guys that for one reason or another, they need their ass in meeting rooms with coaches and other quarterbacks and receivers and tight ends, and they need to be on the practice field together as much as possible. And here the NFLPA is urging them not to do so. That's tough. Now, look, maybe there may some more details will emerge, and it's it's not that big of a deal that the NFLPA is maybe just urging them not to report, you know, to a certain extent up to a certain date. But ultimately, me personally, I don't like them urging players to boycott any of it, because I want to be wide open and be able to work out with my guys as much as I possibly can.
Blue 80, easy, white 90.
Show Justin Fields' second pro day is today. This is the new thing in the NFL where quarterbacks are you're having not one but two pro days. The guest list is pretty interesting to me. And the reason why is because San Francisco and the New York Jets, San Francisco 49ers and the New York Jets are both in attendance. I'm here to tell you, this ain't a courtesy call. They hadn't decided on what they're going to do with the Jets at number two with that pick, and San Francisco hadn't decided what they're going to do with that third-round pick. So everybody can miss me at this point in time with teams being locked into quarterbacks. If the quarterback isn't named Trevor Lawrence, I don't believe that they're locked in. There's a reason why they're at this pro day, because they're interested in potentially taking Justin Fields at three or even at two for the Jets. You know how you commit to a quarterback, show? You give that sucker your playbook.
I believe the Jacksonville Jaguars have committed to Trevor Lawrence, to nobody's surprise, and they, as you said, given that sucker his playbook. You know what I'm interested
Jacksonville
in?
Jacksonville ain't in attendance, by the way.
Well, no, they're not.
That's because they know what quarterback they're taking.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
Right.
And the thing to me with this is interesting is I still believe the smoke is fire and that Zach Wilson will go to the Jets. But I do think what this is about with Fields today is the Niners. And because I don't believe, and I put this nicely, I don't believe that Kyle Shanahan is a dumbass, I believe they will draft Justin Fields. And the reason why I think that it would be a dumbass move for Kyle Shanahan not to is not because of the difference between Fields and Mac Jones. I just don't think that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan would have had to do everything they did to get all the way up to number three from 12 to go and get Mac Jones. I don't think that you do all of that to go up there to get. So this to me is what this is about, is Kyle Shanahan up close and personal seeing Justin Fields, because there's just no way to me that they would make that move to three, to move heaven and earth, three first-round picks to go get Mac Jones. It just wasn't going to take
that. I agree with you, Sheldon.
That far in advance.
To move all of that to go take a distributor, a good fit, a distributor of the football. And I don't mean any disrespect to Mac Jones. I love what he brings to the table. I would love for him to quarterback my team. I'm just telling you, I don't love him enough to take him in the top 10. I don't look at the body of work. I don't watch him play. I don't look at his measurables, his intangibles, and I go, man, this is a top 10 draft pick. This is a guy that if he plays at or above his ceiling, he's going to win a boatload of games and take our organization potentially to a Super Bowl. He's not that guy. This is, and I'm not saying he's not going to go to the Super Bowl. I'm saying you got to surround him with a lot of talent and a great play caller and put him in position by design, by scheme, that's going to allow him to play at his ceiling or above his ceiling. And a lot of stars have to align for that to happen. I think Justin Fields is a guy that we've yet to see the best of him, and his tangibles are through the roof. And if a coach feels like they can get him to play at or above his ceiling, there is zero doubt about it that Justin Fields, if that coach can get him to play at or above his ceiling, Justin Fields will win you ball games single-handedly.
Yeah. So, Justin Fields Pro Day may give us a glimpse on what we're looking at in terms of the draft. Adam Spolane, Sports Radio 610's Adam Spolane, will join us next to give us an update. He just sat through the press conference with the Zoom conference with manager Dusty Baker and James Click, the GM. He'll give us the latest on the breaking news of all the roster moves that the Astros had to make. Adam Spolane coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show.
The breaking news coming down With the Astros, they had to make some roster moves due to safety and health protocols. Yordan Alvarez, Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, Robel Garcia, Martin Maldonado are all to the injured list. James Click and Dusty Baker spoke to the media earlier, and James Click, the GM, said it was due to health and safety protocols. On with us is our guy, Sports Radio 610's Adam Spolane. Nobody, and I mean nobody, covers the Astros and the Rockets, for that matter, better than Adam Spolane. Adam, you were just in those Zoom press conferences with the GM, James Click, and the manager, Dusty Baker. What's the latest that you heard from those guys?
So everything is still pretty vague. We know that the five guys are in the health and safety protocols. We don't know if there's a positive test. The team isn't allowed to say if there's a positive test. All James Click could say is that they are going through more testing to find out for sure. The only way you know if a guy tests positive is if the player gives the team permission to say so, or if the player comes out and says it. So it's really hard to say exactly where they're at. The way that MLB has things set up, even if you don't test positive, but you are in health and safety protocols for contact tracing, you're still out for, I believe it's a minimum of a week. And I believe if you do test positive, then you're out for a minimum of 10 days. So they're working with Major League Baseball. They are trying to get some clarity on this, maybe shorten some of the wait time if those guys, if all the tests do come back negative, but they're going to play today. And James Click said that they talked with Major League Baseball, and Major League Baseball said that they felt that it was safe to play. And so this is something that the Astros have been dealing with going back to last night. They found out after the game that this had come up, and so they called up five guys from the alt site. I believe two of them are in the starting lineup today, and they're just going to try and plow on.
Adam, is there any plan for more, you know, further communication down the line? When we'll know something else of is it a week? Is it 10 days? Did somebody whether somebody tested positive or not is irrelevant. But like just the next time that we'll get an update from the organization.
I don't know the answer to that. This is kind of a new thing for them, at least in season. I mean, last year they never went through anything like this. They did go through it a little bit during spring training. They had, I guess you call it a breakout, or it wouldn't even a breakout or an outbreak. They had one guy test positive, and contact tracing forced, I believe it was six or seven other pitchers to have to miss time during spring training. So basically then they didn't give you like a daily update or anything. They just kind of said, okay, these guys are back in camp now. So I think now that we're in season, you will probably get, you know, you'll probably get updated a little bit more than you were during spring, but it's really hard to say right now.
Adam Spolane, Sports Radio 610, is with us. Did they express any concern that this it stopped with these five, or because of, if they're in healthy safety protocol, they've been around their teammates, is this where they're feeling confident it has stopped?
MLB said that they're confident that this is it, and everyone is wearing one of those contact tracing devices so you know who's been around who. So the fact that the players are wearing that and the fact that Major League Baseball declared that it was safe to play tonight's game, then I do believe the Astros, I do believe that that is kind of a signal that they believe that this is all kind of concentrated to within these five players.
What about these guys that they've called up? There's a couple of them starting. Is there anything you can tell us about those particular guys that we can look forward to seeing tonight?
Well, Taylor Jones is a guy who was up briefly last year, kind of a first baseman type who had a really good spring training and summer camp. Last year, didn't hit all that well once he did get his shot in the big leagues. Garrett Stubbs has been around the organization for a while. He was the third catcher on the roster for most of last season, and he's a versatile guy who can he can catch, he can play a little second base, he can play some left field. He just hasn't been able to find a way to stick, though, in the big leagues or get consistent time. Abraham Toro, obviously, is probably the most well-known out of all the guys that they brought up. He had the big home run, remember, during the Verlander no-hitter a couple of years ago. And he was on the roster for basically all of last season, but did not play well for a lot of the year. And he got basically his spot on the roster was taken over by Robel Garcia, who's one of the guys who they placed on the IL today. And then they added two guys to the 40-man roster with Alex Dagoti, who's been in the organization for a long time as an infielder, and then Ronnie Dawson, who was a high pick by them not too long ago. But, yeah, I mean, it's a big drop-off. That's the big problem with this organization is that they obviously have high-end talent on the roster, but once you get past those guys, the drop-off is pretty steep. And so when you lose, talking in a baseball sense, because baseball is the most important thing right now, but just in a baseball sense and what they're going to have to deal with for the next week or so is that they are missing probably three of their five best guys and not replacing them with guys that you would consider to be, quality big league players at this point. I mean, they had a 1-2 in their lineup this season of Jose Altuve and Michael Brantley, and tonight it's going to be Miles Straw and Aledis Diaz. So, the drop off is pretty considerable right now.
Adam, real quick, I've seen this come across the text line. I wanted to get this across to listeners as well. Does this mean they have to miss 10 days? Like, what are the amount of days that these players have to be out?
So I believe if you are in contact tracing, it's 7. But if you test positive, then it's 10. But I think that it's an evolving deal. I don't think it's necessarily concrete. And I do believe the Astros are working with Major League Baseball to try and see if they can shorten that if the tests come back negative. But that's just kind of where things stand, and it's really tough to say at this point. There has been the Nationals had a little bit of an outbreak at the start of the season, so you're just kind of going based off of that. You can also talk about vaccinations, and Dusty Baker said that all five guys who were placed on IL received their first shot when the team was in town a couple of weeks ago before they went to Oakland. That might be a HIPAA violation. I don't know. So if there are any attorneys out there who can defend me just in case something comes of that, just let me know. And he also said, so you have those five guys got their first shot. And then Dusty also said that Carlos Correa and Yuli Gurriel were vaccinated before arriving in camp. So I don't know if that plays an impact in anything. There is sort of the Major League Baseball 85% rule, where if you get 85% of your team vaccinated, then some of the protocols get relaxed a little bit. Dusty said when the team was vaccinated before the season that he thought they got to 85% of the guys that were on the roster, but the 85% also goes to the alt site, and James Quick has been pretty vague about where they're at when it comes to getting to the 85% mark. So it's really tough to tell right now if it'll be any more or any less in the 7 to 10 days.
More COVID-19 issues. That's just a crazy world that we're living in, man. The organization trying to operate in this world has got to be the bar's got to be constantly moving for them to stay on top of it. Obviously, some problems have hit Houston here. Adam Spolane of SportsRadio610.com joining us. Adam, Show and I were talking about this a little earlier, and you mentioned Straw being the leadoff and Litmus Diaz being hitting in the two hole tonight, and which if you go down the lineup, it slides Correa into the six hole. I mean, are we the only two that look at that and go, damn, that sure seems like it's a slap in the face to Correa to be batting sixth after losing the bats that they've lost as of today?
It's odd. Some of it has to do with left-right and wanting to maintain left-right. But at the same time, and I guess you don't want to concentrate everyone towards the top of their order so they have a little bit more balance in the middle. There's not a whole lot that you can do with this lineup when you're missing the guys that you're missing. But, yeah, seeing Carlos Correa in the sixth spot is a little bit odd, just to be perfectly honest with you. I remember he was hitting leadoff for a lot of spring training, and it kind of felt like there was a stretch where he was the favorite to be their leadoff hitter at some point. So maybe they could have done that. He's hit well in that spot, so maybe Dusty doesn't want to take him out of that spot for that reason. So I don't, Dusty does some things with the lineup that will make you scratch your head sometimes, and that's one of those things, I guess, is the best way to put it.
All right, Adam Spolane, SportsRadio610.com. We thank you for jumping on with us and updating us on this breaking news, man.
Yeah, sure thing, guys, anytime.
All right, that's Adam Spolane. I told you. That left-right thing.
The hell? That's why you trade A.J. Hinch for Dusty.
It's all right, man. He'll figure it out.
How he handles this COVID-19 situation.
Come on now.
Maybe
you're
going to
throw that out there.
That was nice. Good timing, though.
You're
going
to throw that out there.
Just
he
saying.
Loses everyone.
Just saying.
Yeah. Whatever. You're right. AJ's closing his eyes and throwing the lineup together with the guys he has rolling out there. So let's just.
It's really hard. It's really hard for me to take the old, well, the leadoff hitter is the guy that gets the most at bat, so he needs to be your. I mean, it's hard to use that in one case and not this case. Like, how do you not want Brantley, Yuli, and Correa getting the most opportunities tonight?
Instead, you
switch it with Diaz and Straw.
Guy Diaz, who hasn't been playing every week, and then there's Miles Straw.
I mean, hell, just put Castro up there.
I don't get it. All right. Hey, was today. Today we've got the latest in the Deshaun Watson situation. The names have been revealed. The names have been, and the lawsuits have been refiled with the names attached to them. We've learned more. Now, where are we at in terms of a positive place for the Watson camp or the Tony Busby camp? We'll discuss that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show.
All right, we said today was going to be an important day in the Deshaun Watson situation, and we now have arrived at this day. We said Friday, Clint. Friday we felt like was a day of positivity, a winning day for Deshaun Watson, both being able to get the names, even though we knew that was going to happen, but still that was a victory, and then to potentially see what it is that could occur after the names were released. Wednesday today was the day that the names would be released, and they have been refiled by Tony Busby, and there have been 20 of the 22 that have been refiled. One, they are still looking at refiling, and another did drop their case, citing privacy and security concerns. So now there are 20 of the 22 lawsuits that are still being placed towards Deshaun Watson. And even though their names are being released and being known, they are still going forward with their lawsuits. So with that being the case, understanding now that only one has dropped the suit at this point, 20 still going forward with it. Would you say this is progress or a win for the Deshaun Watson camp?
Progress, I would hesitate to say big win. Definitely progress in the right direction, because when you've got 22 lawsuits filed against you, and any way that you can start moving that number in the right direction, which for Deshaun Watson and company, it's shrinking that number. Anytime you can do that, I think it's huge progress, and I do think, actually, literally getting those names, even though the individuals are moving forward with the lawsuit at this point in time, getting those names is progress. So I think it was at the very least a big today's a day of progress. I don't know that I can couch the names. Being the plaintiffs being identified and having just one of them dismiss their case, I don't know that I can couch that as a win, show.
No, I'll be honest with you. Just judging by hearing a lot of the experts that we've heard from on this station, from Amy Dash to Alan Fanger.
Alan, pull my finger.
And I just, if you can't even say it, you knew he's going to do it. To Attorney Sam, to Mike Meltzer, people who are experts in that field, they've talked about thinking that this could be an important moment, because you could see some of the lawsuits potentially being dropped. This has to be very disappointing, hearing from them that yes, one has dropped, and I guess you could say they have kind of knocked away at the numbers, but. I got to believe Rusty Harden thought that kind of pressure putting on, all right, people are going to know who you are, the potential of your business being ruined, the potential of do I want to risk all of this and not even know if my case has enough evidence that really gives me a shot? I got to believe they thought they were going to get 5 to 10, maybe, who say, nah, you know what, Tony, I got to pull out of this. But no, they didn't. They got one individual. And yes, one's better than nothing, but still, this has to be at the very least disappointing. And I wonder if they miscalculated this, or they're going to have to kind of change their strategy with now having to defend 20 when I think they really thought they were going to defend a lot less.
They ain't got no damn choice.
Yeah,
I mean, it don't matter what they thought. They may have hoped for more. I would imagine that they would have hoped for more, given the fact that their stance is that Deshaun Watson is 100% innocent. I would think that they hoped for more, but regardless of what they thought or regardless of what they hoped for, the reality of the situation is he's got 20 lawsuits that now have names attached. And if he is going to if Rusty Harden and his staff, if they're going to stand behind Deshaun Watson as innocent of all allegations, then they got some work to do to prove it. And would they have hoped to have shrunk that number more so that they didn't have to disprove so many lawsuits? Sure, I'm sure they did. But at this point in time, the number's sitting at 20 with another decision coming tomorrow by 2 o'clock. It could be 21. Right now, you know it's 20 names that they have. And so they better hope that they've got some evidence that can at some point in some way, shape, or form start whittling that number down by getting cases dismissed versus hoping that the plaintiffs dismiss themselves.
This is a day that Tony Busby has to feel pretty good about their situation, I would imagine. Being able, because I'm sure there was some concern too, right? Once you get to it, like, and he had a prime example in front of the other plaintiffs. Ashley Solis, like, she's had to deal with it. We don't know if she's telling the truth or she's not, but from since she's come out and spoken, like, yeah, she's caught a lot of things with her business and her personally through her social media. So he had the visual of, like, people could see, the other 2021 could see what would happen. And for him to be able to continue to have all but one say they were going to continue their lawsuit, that is a pretty big win for Tony Busby. And if he wasn't confident, if we didn't feel like he was confident before the way he's carried himself, this probably makes that even bigger, because, I mean, he's sitting here still. Now I'm still here with the numbers of 20 women who are still accusing Deshaun Watson of this, that, and not the numbers where it could, yeah, be down to 12 or 11, which would have been a little bit tougher for
him. You know what else? You know, this one lawsuit being dismissed, you know, the other part of that is, if, you know, I haven't had time yet to sit down and figure out which one of the 22 it is that's been dismissed, right? But show, if this is one of, and I think there was three or four where Deshaun was alleged to have forced some kind of sexual act on the plaintiff. If it's one of those three or four, this is big news, right? If it's just, if it's one of the
more serious potential criminal.
Yeah, because you got different layers here, man. You've got Deshaun, you got three or four where Deshaun is being accused of forcing a sexual act on individuals. You got another three or four where Deshaun Watson, the plaintiffs in the case, spoke with someone immediately following or sometimes even during. And so there will be another hurdle there to get beyond someone that had literal instant experience, personal experience, and will be a witness of some sort. There's three or four of those. And then there's several that were just alleging that Deshaun Watson didn't go as far as he did with those few. If it's one of those, then I think this is ultimately a big win for Deshaun. But if it's one of the ones where
As Amy Dash said, some are more misdemeanor.
Yes.
Of
yes.
Potential harassment more than
yes.
Sexual assault.
Yes, exactly. The closer.
Both terrible.
Yeah.
Both, but
yeah, not minimizing any of it. Both, it's all.
The cost or the penalty to the two are different.
Well, the possibility, right? The I mean, if at the end of the day you're guilty of something and it's a misdemeanor, that's a whole different deal than if you're guilty of something and it's a felony, right? I mean, it's a whole different monster. So what he's being, and look, I understand these are all civil cases. It's at this point in time, there's nothing criminal, you know, at this point, but what he's being accused of, or let me say this, the plaintiff that withdrew her lawsuit, whatever was within that lawsuit matters, right? And it's going, it'll tell you how significant that specific withdrawal actually was. Because I've said from the jump, there's three or four that are major problems for Deshaun Watson. They may be he said, she said, and there may be nothing other than his word versus hers of what happened behind closed doors. But those are major problems, and those escalate this Deshaun Watson situation to a whole nother level when you get to talking about those. So if it was one of those lawsuits, then you can turn it up a notch in terms of how big the decision was for that lawsuit to decide not to move forward.
Just want to keep updated here. The one that did file or drop the lawsuit did drop it in light of privacy and security concerns. Plaintiff reserves the right to refile this case once such concerns are addressed. So it could be refiled if those privacy or security concerns are improved. So that one's not even completely out of it. But yeah, it's to me it would be a disappointing progress, would be how I would determine things from the Rusty Harden and Deshaun Watson. But because it felt like they needed more than this, especially to jumpstart some things, to speed this thing
sure.
across. It seemed like they
if you're looking at this of you know, through the lens of, will the Texans be able to deal Deshaun Watson by the draft, which is 15 days away? Will any other teams be extremely aggressive in pursuing Deshaun Watson? Look, that's going to be dependent on how quickly this Deshaun Watson and Rusty Harden can navigate these issues and get beyond these issues. And this was a day where it possibly could have been a double-digit number decide to withdraw their lawsuit, and it didn't go that way. And it looks like there's at least 20, if not 21, going to put a name on the lawsuit. So, yeah, I'd say this is, things are moving at a snail's pace for Deshaun, and he needs, and the Texans need, if they're going to move beyond Deshaun Watson, they need the pace to pick up significantly.
Clint Sterner and the show here with you on Houston Sports Leader Sports Radio 610. Jadeveon Clowney.
JD.
He signed him a one-year deal with the Browns. And I saw this. Can we please slow down on this? That I'm seeing people, hey, Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney, they are going to be a lethal combination. They got a chance to be a great combination. Can we slow down there?
I'm not slowing down on that.
You think they could be one of the top tandems?
Yes.
Really? Like, you still put Jadeveon Clowney in that space to where, I think it's clear he's not a number two. Or, I mean, not a number one. I think that's clear.
No question.
Yeah, but you still think he's in that, like, I wonder how much better he is than Olivier Vernon, who was there last year, the last couple of years, as the outside pass rusher there. I just, like, can we just slow down and let's let Jadeveon Clowney show us that he can be the 2018. I believe that was a year where he really, really jumped off. Yeah, there was a year that J.J. Had 16 sacks and he had 9.5 sacks, and I think he was a second team All-Pro. Can we, because he hadn't shown any of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, he hadn't shown. Look, nobody's been more critical of JD than me. I mean, there's no doubt about it that there's things he's got. He's he's a limited player. You know, he hasn't lived up overall, hasn't lived up to the number one overall pick. He hasn't lived up to the guy that was demanding, you know, damn near $20 million a year a few years back in a multi-year contract. And he hadn't lived up to that. The expectations were extremely high. If we're being honest, and reality is, and all you got to do is watch the film, reality is he is a very, very good, he's a high-level number two in a defensive front. He is a very good Robin. And these are all ceilings. This is, if he can stay healthy, you know, if he buys into that role and understands he's not the guy, and more importantly, with Jadeveon Clowney, it's all about scheme, right? It's all about scheme, and it's all about the play caller, the defensive play caller for whatever team he's playing for, which this year is going to be Cleveland. And if they ask him to put his hand in the dirt and rush the passer from a three-point stance consistently, or if they even eat up half of his snaps doing that, then they're wasting their time. They're not going to get the best version of Jadeveon Clowney. They got to stand him up. They got to move him in the front, inside and out, linebacker, bringing from linebacker depth a lot, not just sometimes, a lot. Stack him up and play games with him and Myles Garrett coming and really working versus a slide protection or working versus man protections. Those are things that you have. He's not a standalone piece. He's not a J.J. Watt.
God, no.
He's not a Myles Garrett. He's not a standalone piece where no matter what the record of the team is, no matter who they're playing, no matter what scheme they're throwing at, no matter what down it is, he's going to impact the play some way, shape, or form. He's not that guy. It's period. He's not that guy. If the Browns use him the right way, show, there is no question in my mind this could be one of the top 1-2 punches in the game.
Really?
Yep.
See, I just can't. When I think of that, I think like Bradley Chubb and Von Miller, if healthy. I think.
Well, it's different though. It's like you think of Frank Clark and your boy Chris. What's his name inside?
Yeah, 1-2 tandem.
But those are
Pierre Paul and Shaq.
And
Barrett.
You can put Aaron Donald with anybody.
Aaron Donald.
I mean, you know, the thing about JD is it's a high. It's different. Now, if we're talking D tackle, defensive end combo, that's a different monster.
I'm just talking about guys up front. Like guys up front
that can impact the game.
I'll
ride with that.
Yes.
If Jadeveon Clowney is used correctly, I think Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney can be in the conversation in the top 1-2 combo in the game.
Yep. Myles Garrett is big time.
No question.
Right? I mean, he's Batman. There was points before he got injured. You could look and say that dude is the best.
The best legit defensive end in the game.
I still can't forget about how he ran down Deshaun Watson when it looked like Deshaun had the complete whole side of the field together.
He's a freak.
But I just, man, Jadeveon Clowney, yes, he's not. I said it earlier. He's not Rob. He ain't been playing like Robin. He's been Alfred.
Well, no, he's got to show you.
He's
you're
been
right.
The car, the belt on Batman. Like, he hasn't been.
No, you're right. He is very, you watch him play, and it's very underwhelming. He's left a lot to be desired the last couple of years. And now, look, again, I think that revolves around when he gets a little bit of the attention, when he's not playing with other guys that are garnering attention and he can't consistently get one-on-one, or if he's not used the right way, then I think he probably shells up a little bit. That's why he's a Robin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's why the dude's unbelievably talented. He's not a standalone piece. He could be a nasty, nasty two-punch, counter-punch to the best defense, true, legit rush end in the game right now.
Astros having to make huge, huge moves due to safety protocols. We'll tell you exactly what those moves are. If you haven't heard, there are big-time players involved in this. We'll tell you about that next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
It's Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.